Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from KVRF 89.5 FM here in the Matsu Valley. And on the line, we have, back for our second year, a filmmaker, director, and producer of a documentary about the Iditarod called Mush. His name is Alex Stein, calling in from sunny and balmy California. Alex, how is it going?
It is going fantastic, Robert. I wish I were up there running dogs, but other than that, it's going very well.
Well, thank you very much for joining us the second year. I know that last year when you and I did this coverage, we had a heck of a lot of fun together, gave away some cool videos of yours and that sort of thing. And we're going to do some of that this year. I don't know exactly what we're going to give away yet, but we're going to talk about that tomorrow. But we are back for that crazy thing called Iditarod. Before we get started talking about the race, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a writer and documentary filmmaker. I live in Los Angeles, and I'd known about Iditarod for a long time, but I really became interested in the early 2000s when Team Norway was very dominant. I started following the race. At that point, the Iditarod was doing a lot of online outreach, so it became possible to follow the race in a lot of detail from far away. And the more I got into the race and the more I learned about it, the more exciting and amazing it seemed to be. And then I came up for a start, and I saw all of the madness that happened around the Iditarod, and I thought to myself, there is so clearly a movie in this. And it was so clear to me that there was a movie that I didn't really do anything for a couple of years. And then I realized that although the Iditarod itself puts out yearly documentaries that focus mostly on the race and really mostly on the top five or eight teams, that nobody was covering the stuff about the race that really appealed to me, some of the traditions, the volunteers, a lot of the rookies and the back of the pack people. And I decided that this movie needed to be made. So if no one else was doing it, I went up and did it. The movie premiered at the Anchorage International Film Festival in December 2010, and it actually is airing this month on Alaska Public Television, and I believe the first showing is tonight, which is Friday the 1st at 8 p.m.
So it's a big day for you, kind of full circle then. Your movie has finally made it to the viewers in Alaska.
Yes, and I could not be more pleased about it. When it showed in Alaska for the film festival, obviously it's a movie that is something that would appeal to Alaskans, but I got a tremendous response when it played there, and I'm very, very excited to be able to bring it to even more of Alaska.
Go ahead, Alex, go ahead.
And I was going to say, and the DVD is finally coming out, and that will be available in a couple of weeks, and there will be a pre-order link. It's not up on the website yet, but there will be a pre-order link on the website by tomorrow.
Very cool. We'll make sure we put that link on the DogWorks Radio page and all over social media so folks can buy that movie. You and I actually met for the first time at that premiere up here in Anchorage, and we've formed a friendship over the last few years, and man, I'm so glad to be working here with you again this year.
I am too, Robert. I think you're the stuff that you've done with Mushing Radio is just amazing and fantastic, and I'm honored to be a part of it again. And you know, the way that you have been reaching out through social media and through this the radio show and the podcast is just really, really inspiring, and I know that it's brought a lot of people into sort of the Iditarod circle. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, anything that we can do to to publicize this sport and to let people know more about what goes on with it. The more we do that, the better.
There you go. So for folks that are just tuning in and haven't heard my voice before, I've been hosting Mushing Radio for a little over a year. This is my fourth year of covering the Iditarod on a daily basis. We host Dogworks Radio as well. It's kind of our flagship radio show. We host that every week and talk about everything related to dogs. I am a musher. I moved up here to Alaska to train for and run the Iditarod one of these days if weather and money and everything else works out. So I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a musher perspective. I have not run the Iditarod yet, but I pretty much know what's going on in a musher's mind as he prepares to run this race. And I do encourage everybody to send in their comments and concerns, and we'll make sure that we answer any questions we can, because we definitely talk about this after the show over the 24-hour period before we talk again. We will be airing every night during the Iditarod, at least until the first of the pack mushers get through. So that'll be about the 12th or 13th of March. You'll hear our voices every night, and we'll make sure that we post links back and forth all over the place. So with that, Alex, let's get into 2013 Iditarod. What do you have to say first? I'm going to give you the first shot at this. What's going on in the race?
Well, first of all, it is an odd year. Not in terms of being unusual, but an odd-numbered year. So the Iditarod goes by the northern route. The first roughly third of the race is the same every year. The middle third is different. In odd years, it goes a little bit up to the north through Cripple, Rudy, Galena, Nulato, and into Caltag. On the even years, it goes through the ghost town of Iditarod, Shagaluk, Anvik, Grayling, Eagle Island, and then to Caltag. The last part of the race, which is more or less on the coast, is the same every year, going through Unalakleet, up to the Norton Sound, down at White Mountain, and out to the coast in Nome and Safety. So the last year was the first year that they went with the GPS tracker distances. There's a little bit of, I don't know if confusion is the right word. Officially, the race is 1,049 miles long. The actual distance of the race varies a lot because the trail will be in slightly different places every year, and the GPS numbers tend to be, I think they underestimated a little bit, because there are a lot of twists and turns in the trail. Nonetheless, we have a race that is about 1,000 miles long, maybe 1,100 miles long. So this is something that is a very, very difficult thing to do. People who follow the Iditarod like to say that more people have summited Mount Everest than have ever finished the Iditarod sled dog race. I believe there are about 650 people in 40 years who have finished Iditarod. And on a good year, there will be 200 to 250 people who summit Mount Everest. So this is a very difficult and very challenging race to run. Every year, there are people who seem like they are very well prepared who get wiped out by the trail and have to scratch. There are always other people who seem to have magical races where everything breaks in the right direction for them, and they don't have as much difficulty as they thought. But make no mistake about it, this is a very, very difficult and strenuous thing to do with one musher, a sled, a bunch of equipment, and 16 dogs.
That's exactly right. And you know, we're going to talk a lot about the trail and the checkpoints and those folks that are having that magical race and some of those folks that do not do so well. As they used to say on the old ABC Worldwide of Sports, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, it's definitely prevalent on the Iditarod Trail. Do you agree with that, Alex?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of mushers will talk about a lot of mushers are superstitious about certain things, and a lot of them will talk about wanting to be very careful and not to jinx anything, because you are out in the middle of nowhere for most of the race, and weather can turn very, very quickly. The trail can go from being icy and fast to being a little bit warmer and very slow. There can and have been storms, blizzards that come in. Sometimes the entire race is frozen, is stopped for you know, half a day or a day. It's really very much the case that anything can happen. That being said, it's been a couple of years now that all of the sleds have had the GPS trackers on them. It didn't used to be that way, so it used to be a little bit difficult to tell exactly where each musher is. But now there are GPSs on all of the sleds, so fans all over the world can have an instant, very, very accurate, sometimes 10 or 15 minutes old, but a pretty accurate view of where everybody is in the race.
That's exactly right. And for those folks that do follow the GPS trackers, whether they're following it on social media or through Iditarod.com or Iditarod Insider or whatever, just because a person is moving or not moving down the trail doesn't necessarily mean that is, you know, that's the governing part of the race. The GPS is used as a tool to mark where they are, not necessarily as a way to follow where they are as fans. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing to keep in mind, and longtime fans of the Iditarod know this, but people who are new to it might not, there are three rests that all mushers have to take. There's a mandatory 24-hour rest, which can be taken anywhere on the trail. There's an 8-hour rest that has to be taken on the Yukon River, and then there's a mandatory 8-hour rest at White Mountain, which is the second-to-last checkpoint. So all told, there's a lot of traveling, but the rests were put in to make sure that the mushers get a little bit of a break, to make sure that the dogs aren't overworked. And in spite of having all of these three rest periods, the winner will generally, in the past few years, the winner has come in about 9 days from the start.
Right.
Which, considering it's almost 1,000 miles, is a pretty remarkable speed to go.
And if I could just add some musher tech here, a lot of folks don't quite grasp how far that is on a dog team and a dog sled. I like to tell people it's about the distance from Denver, Colorado to Minneapolis, Minnesota, in maybe 30 to 40 degrees below zero, standing on a set of runners about the width of a ruler. That is about what you're doing for 9 straight days. Very little rest, very little time off of those runners. It's just a constant 1,000 miles, very long distance, and it's difficult to put in perspective. I'll do 30, 40, 50, 60-mile runs, and we're doing those in relatively short amount of time, but times that by 9 days, folks. That is a long time standing on a couple of sets of rulers.
Absolutely, and especially in the early part of the race, there are a lot of there's a lot of elevation gain. So you have to go up and down several mountains, and there are several very, very difficult parts very early in the race. So it is every part of the race is challenging. But not only are you on the dog sled on these very small runners in back of the team, but frequently when you're going uphill, the mushers will be off of the sled running along with the team. At some points, they are actually in front of the team leading them. So this is not something for the faint of heart. It's not something for someone who wants to just sit back and relax for 9 days.
So let's talk about what happens tomorrow. Tomorrow is what they call the ceremonial start. I want to make sure that everybody understands what that is. It starts at 10 a.m. on 4th and D Street in downtown Anchorage. 66 mushers will run tomorrow, starting within in first position. Honorary position is Jan Newton, And then the second position is Martin Bucer, fan favorite, four-time Iditarod winner. And the last person to leave, Sonny Linder, has been mushing for a long time. I believe he's been mushing for longer than I've been alive. So it is a very well-rounded group of mushers that are leaving tomorrow. At that point, with these 66 mushers, about 1,056 dogs will be on the trail at any given point, figuring every dog team can have a maximum number of 16 dogs when they start the race on Sunday morning in Willow. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But let's talk about that crazy party that is going on in downtown Anchorage tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. I know you've been a part of it, Alex. I've been a part of it for several years. Describe that whole scenario for our listeners.
Well, the downtown area, there are within maybe 8 or 10 blocks, there are probably between 15 and 20,000 people. There's a big parking garage downtown, and that is absolutely packed with people on every floor of the parking garage looking out as the teams run through. What they will do later tonight is they will truck in dozens of trucks of snow. And they put the snow out in the streets of downtown. And tomorrow the teams will run 11 miles through downtown into the woods and end up at Campbell Airstrip. Because these are streets where people drive usually, the snow has to be brought in. I, for some reason, became almost mesmerized by the idea of them bringing snow in. And I'm not sure this is a big exaggeration, but I probably have about 3 hours of video of trucks coming in and unloading snow. It's a big party atmosphere there. There are costumed characters, politicians. The governor is usually there. Both of the senators from Alaska are usually there. The mayor will be there. And each of these 66 teams will take along someone called an Iditarider. And the Iditariders are people who have won auctions in order to ride in the sled with the Iditarod musher behind the dog team for the first 11 miles. And obviously, if you have, I'm not sure what the minimum is for the Iditarider bids, but the fan favorites like your Martin Boozers or your Lance Mackeys, the Iditarider auctions for those will sometimes be $7,500 for the privilege of riding along with them.
I was just going to say, and for those Iditariders, that is a chance of a lifetime for many of these people. Some of those folks have even caught the mushing bug right there, ended up moving to Alaska and trained for and ran that Iditarod themselves because at one point or another, they were an Iditarider for another musher.
Absolutely. And also a lot of the teams will have a second sled going behind it to kind of slow down and make sure that the teams aren't going too fast when they're going downhill, when they're going through the woods. It's not really a competitive part of the race. The times don't count. The only thing that you actually have to do is start downtown and get all the way to Campbell Airstrip.
And the teams typically start with 12 dogs during this ceremonial start. And the reason being is, as Alex mentioned, it's just too dang fast. I've been on that drag sled for a good friend of mine, Hugh Neff, on occasion. And you literally are running on the city streets, on pavement for a good portion of that mileage. And you cannot stop a dog team on pavement. It's nearly impossible to do. So that second sled is primarily for safety and to give that team a little bit of a slowdown as they go through the city streets and onwards to Campbell Airstrip. So I don't want to get into what happens on Sunday, Alex. I want to talk about that tomorrow. But after the folks get to the ceremonial start, they leave downtown and make it to the airstrip, what happens then? And do you know a little bit of history of why they do it that way? I know back in the early days they ran from Anchorage to Eagle River, and then they started the race from there. Do you know any history on why they do the ceremonial start, other than it being a big party that, you know, to show the world and showcase the sport of Iditarod?
Well, that's the primary reason, at least now. They used to run starting in Anchorage, and I believe the first couple years they actually ran through Eagle River and then around Kinnick, the Kinnick Arm, and up through the woods that way. They stopped doing that route for a couple reasons. One was that there was just too much traffic, and it was hard to block off a highway for 4 or 5 hours so that dog teams could go through. The other problem is that the snow cover was very inconsistent. So while there would be a lot of snow most of the time in the woods, when you got closer to the roads, there would be much less snow cover. It was not really something you could count on or something that was considered safe for all of the dog teams. So they moved up the real start, the competitive start on Sunday, to, I believe they had it from Iditarod headquarters for a couple of years, and then there were years when there just wasn't enough snow there, so they then moved it up to Wasilla, and then a couple years they had to move it past Wasilla up to Willow Lake, and then it was decided that it was just easier to keep it in one location. And so it has been the ceremonial start. I mean, the start on Sunday has been at Willow Lake for, I believe, the past 10 or 15 years at least.
That is correct. And we're definitely going to talk about that restart tomorrow on our show. We will air it at 6 p.m. Alaska time. That will be 10 p.m. Eastern time. For anybody that knows anything about Iditarod fans, during the next couple of weeks, it's almost a 24-hour event for them. You'll hear folks that are up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning following this race on the East Coast or anywhere else in the world. The fans that follow Iditarod are absolutely passionate. Don't you agree, Alex?
Absolutely, and I want to encourage all of them to like the DogWorks radio page on Facebook, to follow us on Twitter. And we'll be posting a lot of stuff all throughout the next couple of weeks. I did want to mention briefly that the start tomorrow is going to be streamed live by the Iditarod Insider, and they've made that free. So anyone around the world can go to iditarod.com and watch streaming video of the starts in Anchorage.
That's exactly right. Alex, we have about 6 minutes left, and I want to talk just a little bit about the field this year. Like I said, 66 mushers, a pretty good majority of them are veterans. Very few rookies are running this year, and we're going to get into this a lot over the next couple of weeks. But, you know, we always do this, Alex. We don't want to jinx anybody or anything, but we did it last year. Who is your pick for 2013 to win that Iditarod?
Well, Robert, I really hate to do this because I don't want anyone to think that I am rooting for someone as opposed to rooting for everyone to do well, which I think is what most Iditarod fans want.
Yes.
Having said that, I think Allie Zirkel is going to win this year. She came close to winning last year. I think if a few things had gone her way, she would have won. Her husband, Alan Moore, just won the Yukon Quest, and she's going to have a lot of the dogs that he had for the Quest on Iditarod. So I'm looking for her to win.
You know, I'd have to agree with you, and we had talked about this at the end of our coverage last year, and when she was on Mushing Radio a few months ago, she and I talked about it as well. I believe it's going to be either Allie or Ramey Smith. I think it's becoming his time. He is one heck of a musher. He lives right down the road from me. I see him on the trails a lot. He is one heck of a dog man, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, and you know, in addition to that, there are a lot of what I'll call the older guard, people like Martin Boozer and Lance Mackey and Jeff King and Didi Genro, and any one of those mushers, if they have a few things fall in their direction, they could easily win the race. So although we're talking about Ali Zirkel, it's certainly more than possible that Lance Mackey could put together a great race and could just run away with it again.
That's exactly right. Alex, just a few minutes left. Can you tell our listeners what to expect over the next couple of weeks, how we typically format this show and what we talk about each night?
Yeah, we typically will spend the first part of the show reviewing what has happened in the past 24 hours since we were on before. And then we usually will talk about some topic that I guess you could term technical mushing, to let people know more about the nuts and bolts of the sport. And then we usually will focus on one musher to profile in a little bit more depth.
We do, and we try to catch a story that they don't necessarily always talk about in the media, whether it's those feel-good stories like last year with Scott Jansen and saving his little dog's life with the CPR. That sort of stuff is what we try to showcase here on this show and give it a perspective from not only a musher's perspective and a big fan, as if you are, Alex, but also a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. I've spent a lot of time with these guys on our other show, Mushing Radio, talking to these guys. I've met quite a few of them. I know you have as well. So we hope to give people a little bit of glimpse of these guys that at least we've met either in passing or spent quite a bit of time with. Right, Alex?
Absolutely. And, you know, we do cover the who's in the lead and who's scratched and what's going on in terms of that stuff, but we also really try to go into depth in a way that a lot of coverage of the race just either doesn't have the time or is not interested in.
That's exactly right. It's so important to hear those middle of the pack and those back of the pack story. So many people put so much time, effort, money. They really put their lives on the line to get to that starting point in Willow and finish that race in Nome, whether it's in 9 days or 2 weeks. Many people sacrifice dang near everything just to do this. And that's the story we're trying to tell here on Mushing Radio and our Iditarod coverage, that this is a race for many people, their entire life dream. This is something that they either dream about when they're kids or they've thought about it and trained for it for years. That's what we're trying to cover. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, Lance Mackey and Jeff King like to point out that there are very few people in the world who actually are able to make a living from running dogs. And that number is probably 4 or 5. For the rest of these people, they are constantly doing something else in order to feed their mushing habit. And for a lot of the middle and the back of the pack mushers, it's a constant struggle. And I know we'll talk about this later. It's a constant struggle to get the money and get the supplies in order to run the Iditarod, which is not a cheap thing to do. So we're going to also give a lot of that perspective as well.
That's exactly right, and I can definitely tell some firsthand stories there for sure. Alex, we're out of time. Very, very quick, as it always is. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And for folks that want to follow us, make sure you follow us on Twitter, @DogWorksRadio and @MushingRadio. And we'll make sure we post links to both Alex's and my personal Twitter and Facebook pages as well, so you can get in contact with us and ask questions. Alex, I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.